Blog Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about something new. A new show called G's Power.
G's Power.
Real talk for real saints.
Are you ready?
And it's for real.
Welcome to G's Power Hour, live every weekday at 11:30 a.m. on Never Had It So Good Entertainment Network. Your host, G, will bring you informative and entertaining guests and a variety of topics in a way that you can absorb and enjoy. Listen in weekdays and call in at 516-387-1944. We love interaction. All shows can be downloaded if you miss one or found on iTunes the next day. G's Power Hour is powered by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network.
G's Power Hour.
Yeah.
Well, good morning, brothers and sisters, kings and queens, angels and saints. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. Happy Friday, everyone. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend planned ahead. And we're going to start off mine this evening by visiting my aunt who's in town. I'm looking forward to seeing her. And then some other things, going to a movie. It's not a new movie, but it's a screening for Coco, which I had not seen Coco, so I'm going to go see that. But in the meantime, he's back. And we're happy to have him, Mr. Robert Bowden of Harry P. Lew Gardens here in Central Florida. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Good morning to you, too. How are you? I missed you.
I missed you, too. I mean, it's like the sky is all gray and we got no rain and things are getting all dried out and stuff without you. So, hi.
That's gonna change in a few hours, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks that way. Because you're back. That's why it's going to change.
Oh,
so,
oh
yeah,
it's see? You're saying it's dark and gloomy because I'm back.
That, no, I'm saying we're going to refresh our atmosphere, you know, with a little rain.
I got you.
Back.
All right, I'm on board now. I got it.
Okay, how you been? How have you been? Because we did
great
miss you last month.
There's just a lot of stuff going on, and your radio wasn't on my schedule, and I just, if it's not on there, it doesn't happen. So we're going to have to make sure that doesn't happen again.
Well, I appreciate that, but I know you're a busy man, and you've got other people who are demanding your expertise, and we're just blessed to have you on. So thank you again.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk with you and have your guests answer, call in with any questions they may have.
And let's put the number out there right now if you have some gardening questions. Just because it's getting a little dry out there and you don't have to cut the grass that much doesn't mean you don't need some gardening tips. And so Robert's here to share those. And the number is 516-387-1944. So
that's right.
There were a couple of things that I did want to talk to you about. And one is about we purchased these pesticides and fertilizers and pests, you know, and other types of things, fungicides, to try to improve the look and the health of our vegetation, and wanted to find out about shelf life for those types of things, because I'm sure they have some sort of shelf life, some sort of effectiveness that kind of wears out the longer you keep them. And I know sometimes we don't use all of our stuff because we don't think it works, so we try to go on to something else. So tell us basically what we should be looking for in terms of a shelf life for our product, and what do we do with the stuff
that
if you don't mind,
I think
anymore.
we probably need to back up just a little bit and
say that
we'd really rather not use insecticides unless we absolutely have to. And I just gave a class on raised bed gardening on Wednesday, and as I told them, the first step, the first defense against insects and pests and diseases is making sure that your plants grow in a stress-free environment. So you go to the
what
store.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm going to tell you. So you go to the store and you buy a really nice container of petunias.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that on your terrace where it's full shade, not a lick of sun. And, you know, they don't look quite as good after a week or so, and maybe 2 weeks, they look even worse. And, oh, gosh, you know what? Oh, there's some bugs on there. Something's eating those things. Well, it's not the plant's fault, because every bug that's on there is a result of having that plant under stress. If that plant were in full sun, where it was supposed to be, and watered and fertilized on a regular basis, those petunias likely won't get a bug or a disease. Now, there's exceptions. St. Augustine grass is going to get bugs. I don't care what you do. So, you know, sod webworms and chinch bugs, roses. Roses are going to get black spot, you know, and the leaves are going to fall off. So there are some exceptions to this, but for the most part, if you can select a variety of plant that has a built-in resistance to diseases, then that would be a big help too. A perfect example of that is cucumbers. Now, you know I love my cucumbers. And they're very hard to grow here, because there's so much disease and so many bugs that it's very hard to get a cucumber seed to grow and then have it produce cucumbers. But for years, I would try to grow this cucumber variety called Market More. Now, Market More is one that you can go to a home improvement store or a garden center, and you pick it off the shelf, and you plant the seeds, and they grow for a while, and then they die, because that seed, that plant, has no disease resistance built into its system. So, you know, that may be fine when you're growing in Ohio or New York or somewhere where it's cooler, but Market More, you can't grow that here. So when we buy plants and we buy seeds, let's start by looking at those plants that have displayed a resistance to diseases and insects, so we don't have to use all those chemicals that are in your shed. So that's the most important thing. Look for those varieties that are disease and insect resistant, and make sure you put the right plant in the right place. You know, we get calls a lot from people who they say, you know, I've got this beautiful flower container. I've got petunias, and I've got all these things in there. But some of them are doing real well, and some of them are really doing poorly. And they send me a picture, and what they have done, they picked the plant solely by color and by form and texture. So, and what ends up happening is they put plants together with unlike requirements. So they have sun and shade plants together. They have dry and wet plants together. So what happens is that, you know, plant that grows in full sun that really likes the shade, it's really going to show that it's hurting. And a plant that was supposed to be in the sun that's growing in shade is going to feel the hurt. So before we go off on, you know, get all of these insecticides and fungicides, it's important, one, to select those varieties that are resistant for the Florida climate, and two, make sure that you put similar plants together and make sure that it's the right plant in the right place. So, having said that, there are still some plants, as I mentioned, turf, roses, for example, they're going to get bugs. That's the nature of the beast. And so many of these growers that are producing all these new plants, new varieties of plants, they, again, back to roses, they may have bred that plant solely for a beautiful red velvet color and fragrance. Damn the torpedoes for disease resistance and insects and all that. All I want is a red rose that has lots of fragrance. Well, you're just lining yourself up for defeat, because that plant hasn't been grown to show resistance to disease. All it's being grown for is its fragrance and its color. So a good example here at the gardens, we've virtually eliminated 150 different roses in this garden, different varieties of roses, and stuck
wow.
with about 16 or so varieties of roses that we know perform well. Because we know people come to a botanical garden like Lou Gardens with ideas of getting names of plants that they should grow in their garden.
Mm-hmm.
So they write down a name of this rose, and if they had talked to the person out there in the garden, that person, you know, may be pretty, but boy, it gets black spot really, really bad. So make sure that you get those disease-resistant plants and insect-resistant plants if you put the right plant in the wrong place. Okay, so what do you do then when you do get bugs? Well, you need to step back and say, what am I doing wrong? You know, plants usually don't get bugs. Healthy plants don't get bugs and diseases. So I need to step back and look at it and say, what can I do to change how this plant is growing? Maybe I'm not watering enough. Maybe I'm watering too much. Maybe it needs to go in the sun instead of the shade. And once you've determined that, if you make those small little changes, most of the time, you don't need those insecticides and the fungicides. But sometimes it happens. As I said, turf is a perfect example. St. Augustine turf is very, very maintenance intensive, as is zoysia. Everybody said that beautiful zoysia grass is going to be the thing to put down in your garden, because nobody likes the St. Augustine grass. We're going to go with zoysia. Zoysia has the same problems that St. Augustine does. The only grass that you don't have problems with is Bahia. But a lot of the HOAs and a lot of neighborhoods forbid it because it's not a really fine, beautiful, cultured grass like St. Augustine is. But if you have these pesticides in your shed, one, make sure that all these pesticides and fungicides are not in your home. It needs to be in a shed or somewhere outside the living area, because many of these have petroleum distillates in them and are very, very hazardous. If they were to catch on fire, it could have devastating results. So along with your gas cans for all of your equipment, your gas cans and your pesticides, they all need to be outside the home in a shed, preferably far away from the house. My dad was a fireman, and boy, he preached that to us every day. So you keep the gas outside in a shed, keep all those pesticides out there in a shed. So what's the length of time that those pesticides are good? They're good for a very, very long time. The only time that you really need to concern yourself with whether a insecticide, for instance, is good or bad, is if it's in a bottle. Sometimes the bottles back in the old days, they used to be made of metal. And obviously, if the metal starts to corrode or they show rust, you need to get rid of it. If they're in plastic bottles or glass bottles, these last a very, very long time. If they're in glass or plastic, you should be able to see into that bottle and determine whether or not it's all one color or has it separated. And if it's separated, then obviously you need to get rid of that. But if it's all one color, then it's still good. And the same thing with fertilizer. We don't think about fertilizer, but, you know, we're cleaning out the shed and we find this big bag of 10-10-10 fertilizer. Well, I wonder if this is still good. Well, as long as it hasn't gotten wet, it could be hard as a rock. But as long as it hasn't gotten wet, that fertilizer is still good. And it's the phosphorus and the potassium that's in that that absorbs a little bit of the moisture from the air and turns it into a rock. There's no reason why you can't open that bag and bust it up with a hammer or a stick or whatever and use it on your plants. It doesn't hurt a thing. It's just make sure that it hasn't gotten wet. If it gets wet and then dries, it releases this nitrogen compound called urea. And you put it on your plants, it'll burn them up instantaneously. By the end of the week, those plants that you put it on would be dead. So make sure that it hasn't gotten wet. If it's gotten wet, you'll have to throw it out. But if it's dry, but it's just hard, then the fertilizer is okay. But most of the pesticides that we use today, including fungicides, have a very, very long shelf life. And we really encourage people not to dispose of those things on your own, that you go to one of your local transfer stations, whatever county you may be in. I know in Seminole County, they have certain drop-off days where you can bring your pesticides and they'll take them from you. I believe the transfer station also will accept paints and things like that every day. So every day that they're open. So don't just get rid of somehow. Make sure that they're disposed of in a proper, legal, and environmentally sensitive way.
Okay, that's good to know. Appreciate
long
it.
Long answer to a short question.
No, but that's good, good. That's why I always tell everybody, you've got to save the link to these shows because you need to get this information, make sure you get all of this information. It's hard to get all at once, but if you listen to the show again, you can get it. But we are going to take a quick break. We are here. He's back, Mr. Robert Bowden of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. This is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. We will be right back. Well, I guess we're going to continue. So welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. Thanks so much for being with us today. We're here with Mr. Robert Bowden of Harry P. Lou Gardens. We're going to make up for some time from last month. So anyway, wanted to also talk to you, and I didn't know if I had missed anything from what we were just talking about, but I also wanted to talk to you about houseplants. Because my understanding is it's good to surround yourself with greenery, with plants, because it helps to keep the environment clean a little bit. I mean, I know you probably aren't going to do a whole lot unless you basically have a greenhouse inside your house or something like that. But I wanted to ask you, how do we select the right house plants? And then how do we keep them and maintain them and make sure that they're healthy and, looking good for where we put – and where's the best place to put them, I guess. That's another question.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that if you want to gain the most oxygen from a houseplant, I can tell you that the peace lily, that beautiful green plant with a beautiful white flower on it, is the number one houseplant for the production of oxygen. When I lived in Missouri, we were asked to do some research for the biosphere. Remember years ago, they built this huge, big greenhouse, a couple acres, and then put a group of people in there, and they were to live inside of that on their own and produce everything, including oxygen, for them to live. And we were tasked with trying to determine what plant produced the most oxygen, so as these plants grew, they produced enough oxygen for the people in that large greenhouse to grow. It was completely sealed, So we created this little microclimate inside this greenhouse, and it turns out that the peace lily is the one that produces the most oxygen. So if you're interested in taking a little bit of the outside inside and getting a good oxygen high and helping purify the air in your home or your office, the best plant that we've discovered to do that is the peace lily. And they're very inexpensive, and they're very available in stores, both home improvement stores, garden centers. They sell them at IKEA, I think. I mean, they're just a really, really good plant. So,
well, I'm glad to hear that, because I really do like peace lilies, so that's great.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, they're a great, easy plant to grow, as long as you keep them moist and not wet. I don't know any house plant that you can grow either in your office or your home that's going to like its roots being in water all of the time. And I think if any one habit of humans that we have that is really detrimental to plants, it's overwatering. More plants are killed from overwatering than anything else. You'd be amazed how plants can survive not getting watered. It may be that you just don't put on flowers, but they'll still live. They'll survive. But if they have wet feet, it doesn't take long for them to go. So you have a saucer, and you put your plant in a saucer, and you water it, and allow that plant to absorb all the water out of that saucer that it possibly can over an hour or two time, and then you get rid of the saucer. That way, and keeping the saucer under the plant will prevent your plant from staining whatever surface you have. So whether it's formica or corian or granite or quartz, you always want to make sure that you have a saucer underneath there so it doesn't stain anything. But make sure it's not standing in water, because that'll kill it faster than anything. The other thing that, and it's sort of the same thing we talked about earlier this hour, and that was, right plant, right place.
Right.
We are so fortunate that the labels that come with these plants now are very specific on the requirements and how much light and how much shade they need. So, and it's really in the grower's best interest to make sure that you get the right information, because the more successful you are, the more plants you're going to buy. So it's really important to read the information that comes on those little plastic sticks that come with the plants. And then make sure, again, that you take the like plants and put them in the right spot. So you can't take an English ivy, for instance, which really likes shade, and put it in a really hot window facing south and expect it to survive. It's just not going to do that. But if you do, what do you think is going to happen? Bugs.
Yeah.
Bugs are going to come in, especially spider mites inside the house. They come in only when a plant is under stress. And unfortunately, spider mites are very, very tough to get rid of once you get them. And spider mites only... I have never seen a spider mite on a healthy plant. They only attack those plants that are under stress. So, for instance, I had a ficus tree in my house. And I have it in front of a heating vent or an air conditioning vent. It's in the shade. And... I water it when I remember to water it, which could be, every 3 or 4 weeks. So what do you think I've got? I've got all these little spider webs, all these webs between the sticks and the stems and the leaves. Well, the only reason that that plant is sick is because I put the wrong plant in the wrong place. These ficus trees grow in Miami outdoors. They like it moist. They like full sun. They don't like drafts from an air conditioner or a heater, depending on the season. And somehow those spider mites know it, and they'll find it, and they'll just destroy that plant. All of a sudden, the leaves will start to turn yellow, and the leaves will fall to the ground. It looks like autumn. Ficus trees don't have an autumn. If they're losing their leaves, it's not because it's the time of year. If they're losing their leaves, it's because they're getting too much or too little water. So the bad thing about spider mites, and it's the one bug that you'll find indoors more than any other bug. They are tough, tough animals to get rid of. And not only that, but they have a very, very short turnaround time. So if a spider mite is born today, that spider mite can produce offspring in 10 to 14 days at 70 degrees. At 80 degrees, a spider mite that is born today can produce offspring by next Wednesday. And at 90 degrees, a spider mite can produce offspring in 3 days after it's born. So you're going to enter into an uphill battle, because it's almost impossible. Once they get spider mites, it's almost impossible to get rid of them. But the best way to do that would be take it outside, wash everything off as best you can, apply neem oil or safer soap, and you'll have to do that a couple times until you get it pest-free, and then bring it back into the house, but put it back into the house in a location that's conducive for that plant to thrive. There's a difference between surviving and thriving. And a lot of these plants are put in the wrong spot, and they're thriving, but they're not really growing well.
I see. Okay. Well, good.
There's just so many plants that require different amounts of water and sunshine. And you just have to stand there in the store and study the sticks and see, oh, this one takes full sun and moisture. What other plants here take full sun and moisture? And then you group those together. Now, if you don't want to put them in a similar container, the water you can control plant by plant, again, with that saucer, and then you'll have to control the sunlight, but depending on where you put it. So you put it on your desk, it may not get a lot, but if you put it over behind a window with a curtain on it, a sheer curtain, that may be all that plant needs. So you wouldn't take a African violet, for instance, and put it on a windowsill facing south where it gets really hot, strong sunlight. That plant will die within 2 or 3 weeks. Likewise, you probably don't want to keep it on your desk all the time because it needs more care than that. So you have to be switching plants around a little bit. In the case of an orchid, for instance, they have these beautiful moth orchids or Phalaenopsis orchids, and those are the ones that you see growing and for sale in the stores. Truth be known, they produce the flowers and then we throw them away. They're really not worth keeping and trying to get it to bloom again, unless you really have a knack or you really want to do that. But we consider a lot of these plants, like the Phalaenopsis orchid, as home decor, not a plant necessarily. We consider it home decor. And then once it stops blooming, you just throw it out and you buy another one for $7 or $8. They're not very expensive. I've seen greenhouses up in Apopka that grow 17 acres of white Phalaenopsis orchids. And they're on sale in grocery stores and hardware stores and home improvement stores in nurseries and garden centers because they're so inexpensive to produce, and they're inexpensive just to throw them out and reap and just buy a new one. So think of it more as home decor, and when it stops blooming, you just throw out and get another one because they're fairly inexpensive. And a good Phalaenopsis orchid can live and produce flowers for 4 to 5 months. So it's a long-term deal.
We are going to take a quick break. We are here with Robert Boughton of Harry P. Lou Gardens. And when we come back, I'm going to ask Robert about things that we should be planting in this time of year, especially in Central Florida, and why they're closing early tomorrow. So you want to stay with us. So this is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment, and we will be right back. Okay, I've got to check on my producer. I don't know where she went, but we're going to keep going. All right, so I know gourds are very popular this time of year. We're here with Robert Boughton of Harry P. Lou Gardens, executive director there, and gourds are very popular this time of year, right? Do you have any – I was going to ask you because I know you like to cook a lot of this stuff. Do you have any recipes for our gourds other than the pumpkin pie and some other things this time of year? Robert? Okay. We are going to keep going. Welcome back to G's Power Hour. I've never had it so good entertainment. I am your host, G. Well, let me give you the number in case you have any questions for Robert. The number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944. And we're here with Robert Boughton of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in Central Florida. Robert, are you there? All right. We're going to hopefully maybe take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Over the past 60 years, Dove Beauty Bar's superior formula has remained unchanged. But when it comes to beauty, everything changed. Together, we redefined beauty. We said no to stereotypes and yes to every type. We let go of judgments and embraced what makes us unique. We're proud to have been there with you, caring for you every step of the way. Here's to the next 60 years.
Hi, I'm Tim Garris. You may know me as Timmy G. Yeah, I know. It's been 2 decades, but I want you to know I'm back in the art with you. And I've got a mix of music that can help you relax and chill out. It's smooth. It's relaxing. It's chill out jazz. The soulful mix of smooth jazz, soul, and smooth R&B. So join me every Wednesday night, 10 p.m. to midnight, on K-Ham Radio.
Are you chilling?
Good afternoon, and welcome back to G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. I am your host, G. We thank you for being with us today. We are here with Robert Boughton of Harry P. Lou Gardens here in beautiful Central Florida. And if you have questions, this is a good time to ask Robert. The number is 516-387-1944. And Robert, I was asking about gourds. I know they're popular this time of year. And I wanted to find out, because I know you like to do cooking, if you had any recipes you recommend or anything in terms of how to handle gourds or things we can do with gourds other than just decoration or a pumpkin pie.
Well, we certainly love pumpkin pie and sweet potato pie, don't we? We wouldn't be the South without it. I have a wonderful recipe that we use using butternut squash, and I love fresh ginger. So I go out into the garden, and I dig a few of the ginger roots out of the garden, and then the nice thing about growing them in the garden, they're so different than those ginger roots that you get at the store. Because they're very pithy, they have lots of fiber in them, And the ginger that you cook, that you dig out of the garden, has a very, very thin, paper thin skin on it. So once you wash them really well, you really don't need to peel them. You just chop them up as fine, and then you cook the onions and the ginger together, and then you use the chicken stock, and you cook all of that. You cook the butternut squash into, you know, 1-inch squares, and then when everything's nice and soft, I use one of those little what do you call it, immersible handheld mixers, but you could do it in a food processor too, I guess. And I put twice the amount of ginger that you would normally put in there because it tastes so good. And it is one pot. There's not a lot of work involved. And once it's nice and soft, just before you're ready to serve it, you take it off the heat and put in some cream and stir all of that together. And the rest of the day is just going to be glorious because that fresh ginger and that fresh squash, there's nothing quite like it.
Okay, you're making me hungry. Good thing I have lunch here on standby
I'm
right now.
I'm making myself hungry. It's 12 o'clock. So
and
my question to you is, you can grow butternut squash here. Acorn squash, butternut squash, gourds, as you talked about before, and then the regular squash, you know, the zucchinis and the yellow straight necks. You grow all of those very well here this time of year, actually. So it's very timely that we talked about that. How do you know when you're growing a butternut squash or a spaghetti squash or what else? Acorns. How do you know when they're ripe? How do you know when it's time to harvest? Because you want them to get as big as they can so you have more to eat. But how do you know whether those are ready to be picked or not?
I don't know.
Oh.
That's why I have you here.
Yeah. So this is what you do. You're out in your garden and you're growing butternut squash. And again, this is another good time to grow them. You grow them in the spring too, before it gets really hot. And there's usually a little curlicue over by the stem. And when that stem starts to dry off, then probably it's a good, the vine may actually die because the plant has performed its responsibility by producing fruit with seeds in it, so it's going to die, and the fruit is just standing out there. But the real test is to take your thumbnail and press it into the skin, and if it's hard and you don't leave an impression, it's ready to be harvested. If you put your thumbnail into it and it leaves a dent or it leaves a little mark on it, they're not quite ready yet. So when you go to a market where you or to a farm where you have you pick, that's how you want to test it. You just put your fingernail on there, and if it looks, if you don't see anything, then it's ready to go. And there's, I have to tell you, I love butternut squash. I can cut it in half, take the seeds out, put a little butter and brown sugar on it, and put that in the oven or microwave for 10 minutes, boom, it's ready. I can have that for dinner, just that alone. It is so good.
You know, I grew up, my mom used to make the yellow squash, and that's basically what she made. And she taught me how to eat it. I wasn't really a fan of squash.
Yeah.
But she taught me how to eat it, because, which I'm glad, because then a lot of times you go out and you go to these banquets and stuff like that, you know, for nonprofits, and you have a lot, you have squash. A lot.
Squash.
But I never
squash
had.
Casseroles.
Yeah. But I never had squash until, excuse me, butternut squash until recently, not too long ago. And I actually took one and followed the recipe for baking it, and I actually did it kind of like, I want to say like a sweet potato souffle of sorts, but I put a little cinnamon in it and ground cloves and stuff like that. And it was really good. My husband and I looked at each other and like, we may need to incorporate this a little bit more in our diet because it was really good. And then the other thing that I saw, and I've got to get one of those gadgets to do it, but in Publix they had the zucchini squash in the like spaghetti noodles. You can buy
spiralized.
The spiralized. And I've got to get a spiralizer because instead of using the regular pasta, I used the zucchini noodles one day, and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, you know, it's really a versatile type of plant, vegetable to use.
They really are. Yeah. And then there's, what are they, spaghetti squash. Spaghetti squash gets a little bit smaller than a football. And unlike the squash, like the zucchini and the yellow squash that we eat, the spaghetti squash can be grown as a vine on a fence or a trellis. So if you don't have a lot of room, you can grow on a fence and still grow a lot of different vegetables. But that spaghetti squash, there's so many things. I love it with a good marinara and meatballs. I'll tell you, and it's so good for you. I mean, those spaghetti squash, you don't worry about the pasta. And you steam that, and then it is so good. But the, acorn squash, very easy to grow, very easy to prepare. But I think, and there's turban squashes, lots of different squashes. And you can buy, a sizable butternut squash for, $2 or $3. And between my wife and I, we can eat that up pretty quick and be happy with it. It's very tasty, and it doesn't take a lot of work.
Yeah, we just bought an acorn squash. He's like, here, you going to cook this? I'm like, if you trust me to try it out, I'll work on it, sure. So that's my next project is the acorn squash.
Yeah, you just cut it in half.
Mm-hmm.
You have point at one end and the stem on the other. You cut it across. You take the seeds out, and you put it in a bake-proof dish of some sort. Put butter and some brown sugar on it, and you bake that for about 30 minutes and take it out. There was nothing better on a fall evening. Take that outside on your porch and just watch the sun go down and eat a good acorn or butternut squash. It's hard to beat.
Wow. Well, you're talking sunset, so your bag must face west, which is great. I have to do the sunrise, which is my bag face east.
Well, it's so fall. I mean, it's so autumn. These different squashes, and they're just so easy. There's many, many recipes. Thank goodness we have Google, where we can look at all these different recipes. But that one with ginger and butternut squash probably tastes more ginger than the squash. But I did a demonstration down at City Hall for, the city participates or creates this wellness program, and as a result, the City of Orlando employees are some of the healthiest in Central Florida. And so we were asked to go down to City Hall and make some demonstrations on one dish healthy meals, and one of them happened to be that butternut squash. And I have to tell you, there wasn't a drop left at the end of the demonstration because everybody came back for seconds and thirds. And it has nothing to do with the chef or the cook, believe me. It's all about eating fresh vegetables and right out of the garden. There's nothing like it.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. Just a whole different taste and just I think our taste buds kind of sometimes get assaulted or taken for granted, and when you get something that's fresh, it's really great. So.
Well, we have a lot of culinary classes at the gardens that we mm-hmm. utilize vegetables from the vegetable garden and herbs from the herb garden. And everything in that soup was grown at the gardens. So, you know, the beans, the onions, the fennel, the tomatoes, everything is from the gardens. We just throw it in a pot. Well, the only thing we don't have is the bacon, or maybe it's Italian sausage, but everything else is fresh out of the garden. And people are amazed how wonderful it tastes. It has nothing, well, maybe it has something to do with the recipe itself, but it's all about the fresh food. And that's what we're all about. High flavor, low calorie, fresh food that you can grow at home. And we have classes on how to grow vegetables and herbs at the gardens at least once a month.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Robert why the gardens are closing early tomorrow evening, and think something that might make you change your plans for the weekend. So this is G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. If you have questions for Robert, the number is 516-387-1944. That is 516-387-1944, and we will be right back. Okay, we're going to keep going. So we're here with Robert Bowden of Harry P. Lew Gardens here in Central Florida. He's the executive director there. And, okay, what's going on tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we have a couple things going on. First of all, we have a pumpkin carving workshop, and that should be a lot of fun. You can paint them or you can carve them, and that actually starts at 10 o'clock. So make sure you go to Eventbrite/Lew Gardens, and you'll be able to participate in that workshop. Tomorrow, we're scheduled to have, at 7 o'clock, a jazz and blues concert. We're probably going to make a decision later this afternoon on whether that's actually going to happen or not, because we've seen, for instance, that we're looking at an 80% chance of rain as a result of the storm in the Gulf.
Hello.
So we're not 100% sure, but of course everybody that has tickets will be reimbursed for that. And I don't think, given the schedule in the fall and how busy everyone is, that'll be rescheduled. But so we're not quite sure. And this is sort of an odd thing because we haven't tried it before, but there are a lot of people who would like to go to some of our classes, but they go to church on Saturday and not on Sunday. So we've created this class called Succulents, Cacti, and Art for Teens. It's for 13 and up, and it talks about succulents, and it's on Sunday. So if usually you go to church on Saturday and you're looking for something to do on Sunday that could be kind of fun, then Sunday at 1 o'clock we're having a class on succulents and cactus. So that could be fun. And then later on this month we have, I know a lot of your listeners are probably involved in homeschooling, and we have a lot of really good homeschool programs that are available at the garden. So we encourage your listeners to follow up on that. We have an outdoor portrait photography class. We have a fall watercolor class. One of my favorite, and this is on a Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and that's breakfast with veggies. So we have a delicious breakfast recipe from the garden, and we'll make... have you ever had avocado pudding?
No.
Ah.
But I noticed that there are a lot of
sounds a little weird.
But I noticed that avocado is kind of the new it.
It is.
Vegetable.
It is.
Vegetable? Fruit? Avocado.
It's a fruit. It's a fruit.
It's a fruit. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Yep. And we, one of my favorites that I make for the people that come for that, we take Ezekiel bread and we broil it on one side so it's crispy on one side and soft on the other side. And then we put a big dollop of avocado that we put in a food processor. We put that on top. And then we take fresh vegetables, onions, peppers, squash, saute those really quick so they're still crunchy. And put that on top of the avocado and then a fried egg on top of that. And you talk about a great weekend breakfast. You can't get any better than that. And it is wonderful. And we'll make the beautiful avocado pudding. And don't turn up your nose, because avocado pudding is really, really good. I know you can go online and see avocado pudding. Now they have chocolate avocado pudding, which is awful. I've made it, and it's just dreadful. But this,
oh, no.
the avocado pudding, obviously has avocado, some kind of sweetener. We usually use agave nectar, vanilla, and a little bit of lime juice. And we put that in a food processor, and we let it run, and it creates this amazing green light mousse. And people that hate or just really don't like avocados, they love this stuff. So it's a real popular thing. And there are other, I think we cook 4 or 5 different items for that breakfast with veggies. And then later, the same day, we have the basics of succulents and cacti. We have yoga. We have aromatherapy for pets. What else do we have? We have vitalist herbalism. We have beekeeping. We've got everything. So just go to Eventbrite, Blue Gardens, and see what might be of interest and sign up online.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have your outdoor movie coming up in a couple of months. I actually went. I wasn't sure if I was going to go. I went to the last one because I'm not usually into scary movies. But
yeah.
I saw The Others with Nicole Kidman. It wasn't that bad.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It was interesting. You know, the twist endings. I love twist endings. So.
Yeah.
And this coming movie that you have coming up on I think it's on the 1st, you have A Quiet Place coming up with, I think it's Emily Blunt that's in that one.
Mm-hmm.
But you've really got me thinking now that I started going to your outdoor movies, and I'll still be coming, but you've got me thinking about getting I have a decent-sized backyard. You've got me thinking about getting a screen and doing that more often in my own backyard, which I had not really thought about before. Yeah. You just can't beat it.
What we do at our house, depending on the time of the year and everything, I have an inexpensive projector, and mm-hmm. I have a double wide garage door, and I'll set this projector on top of a trash can, and everyone in the family and some of the neighbors will come over with their lawn chairs, and we just have this amazing it gets dark at 7:30 now, so you can
see a
2-hour movie and be home and be in bed by 9:30. That's kind of a fun thing to do. The only thing in our case, we have to be careful because somebody has to take turns watching for our bears, because the bears walk right through. So we want to be careful.
You're in Seminole, right?
Yeah, I'm in Longwood. We had 3 of them last week, and one of them, there's 2 cubs and a mm-hmm. mommy bear, and they were sleeping up in the tree in our backyard. And when they woke up that afternoon, the little one pranced over to my wife's Jeep and crawled through the window and took a bag of cat food and a box of Honey Nut Cheerios.
And then
3 of them proceeded just to sit right there in the driveway and have themselves a little picnic.
You gotta watch
for the bears. But other than that, it's a lot of fun. And you know those little guys? Now, they didn't leave one not one piece of Cheerio anywhere in that yard. They ate every last little donut, you know?
Oh, no. Oh,
you
no.
Know? But, you know,
so
surprisingly, they don't do any damage. You know, they were in the back of the car.
Yeah, I was wondering when you were talking about the back, because I have seen stories where they've just really ripped up, you know, interiors of cars. But so you said they didn't do anything.
No, my wife very rarely rolls her window up. And this is the second time, actually. We had a bigger bear last time and sat in the back and ate a lot of the cat food. And then after, you know, we were able to make enough noise and rattle him, he kind of left, walked about 20 yards away. And we threw him what was left of the cat food, and we rolled up all the windows. And then when we left, he tried to get back inside, but they didn't do any damage whatsoever. And they know how to open doors, and they're very nimble with those big hands that they have. They can get into places and open things up. One of the favorites is a Wendy hamburger. If there's a part of one in the car somewhere from the kids, he'll unwrap that with those big, big paws that he has and eat the sandwich. It's an amazing thing to see.
So now, I assume, garden at home. How do you keep them out of your garden at home?
Bears don't bother vegetable gardens. There's nothing in there they want.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Good. Good to know.
So they do. They love bird feeders, though. When I have 2 acres up in Longwood, and the bears, I have a lot of different sets of bears that kind of walk through from time to time. And, you know, sometimes they do their business in the yard, you know, and I don't pick it up. I'm just kind of curious as to what they're eating. And most of the stuff that comes, that germinates in that stuff, we call it scat, are sunflower seeds. So they will go up to a bird feeder with those big paws and that tongue, and they'll take every little piece of sunflower out of that and other seeds as well. And that's what they really like. So when their scat starts to germinate, it's all sunflower seeds. It's really kind of fun to watch.
Wow. Okay.
I need a life, don't I?
Well, it's just interesting how casually you're talking about, oh, they come and they do this and they do, you know, it's just so regular to you. I would be considering a change of residence.
No.
If they were visiting that often.
They are so beautiful. Their fur is glossy, glossy black. And provided you don't corner them, they can be within 10 yards and they just walk on by. You just don't make any fast gestures. And the mother and the two cubs just walk by because they'll come up on you. You don't want to move, you know? So you just let them go by. Yeah, they're kind of cute.
Robert, just so that everybody knows, let's give everybody the normal hours for Lou Gardens in case they can't make it this weekend but they want to come some other time. What are your normal hours?
So beautiful Lou Gardens, which is on just north, just minutes north of Orlando. If you take Interstate 4, you get off at Exit 5 and simply follow the signs. The gardens are open every day except Christmas, from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock. Last garden entrance is at 4:30. So if you get it, if you pull your car in at 4:35 and you want to walk through the gardens, it'll be closed. But once you're in there, you can stay. So this is a beautiful time of the year to come. The bromeliads are in full bloom. We just replanted the vegetable garden. The butterfly garden is absolutely gorgeous right now. The tropical stream garden is beautiful. Lots of bromeliads and tropical plants. Different heliconias and gingers blooming right now. So it would be, and now that the temperature is a little cooler, it would be a perfect time of the year to come to the gardens. And it's, as I said, exit 85 off of Interstate 4. And if they'd like more information on what's available at the gardens, all they have to do is go to the computer and type in lugardens.org, O-R-G, and that's L-E-U, gardens.org, and you'll see all the things that are going on.
Robert, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate you coming back, and have a blessed weekend. And we'll pray that the rain ends in time for your event tomorrow night.
I hope so, too. Have a good weekend.
You do the same. And thank you all for joining us. This has been G's Power Hour on Never Had It So Good Entertainment. Monday, we are having what I call the Divine Divas of GPH, the Capitans of Cuisine and Coiffure. We have Chef Z Carter, and we have stylist Candace Thomas. So please be with us. Have a very blessed weekend, and please remember, all real power comes from God. Take care.